Lowry, after you get off the radio with Flux, McDonald, who's there on the bridge with you, leans back in his chair. So Mercury, this Chinese-Iranian turtle, whoever Howard is, all in the same place, huh?
Oh, Howard is Kimon's son, sir.
Really? Helping Mercury?
So it would seem.
I guess the apple don't fall far from the tree, does it?
Well, criminals often do have a similar profile. For example, anger problems, which leads into altercations that make a person unemployable, except in fields where anger problems are considered an asset.
So when do you strike?
I think soon. Kimon's planning to poison his son, and after that's done, we can probably move in.
You're not gonna wait for them to do whatever crime they're supposed to be doing?
Why bother? At this point, Captain Gui is aiding and abetting Mercury, which is a crime. We've got him. If we strike before they get too far out of New Jersey Delphia, we don't have to worry about jurisdiction. And we have a better controlled entry for the fortress to unveil to the public. It makes this great debut as a crime-stopping tool, then triumphantly returns to a scheduled fanfare after passing its prisoners off to Luna Island.
What stops Mercury from just hopping into the ocean when the fortress rises up to greet him?
Nothing, but I've been thinking about this. He always gets away. We could try to make this work carefully, get everything perfect, hide the fortress and not really utilize it to its greatest potential, and then still not capture him. We failed enough times before. It's almost expected at this point. But if we can take in Gui and Howard, stop whatever smuggling is going on, then we've made some major apprehensions and have another clear victory over Mercury's criminal empire. We chase him down again, destroy what he does again, over and over until he runs out of money and out of respect to run his gangs. Each victory is more proof of the quality of this company's work.
That's a solid, big-picture way to look at it.
Thank you, sir.
And speaking of the big picture, I wanted to better flesh out how we do your public broadcasts.
Sure, I've been thinking about that as well.
That's good. I'll have the writers get in touch with you so you can collaborate on ideas. But just to be clear, the main thing I want from your broadcast is a display of strength. Now, I know you worry about the public opinion, and, of course, the shareholders, but who we're really trying to court now are the politicians. See?
Well, there are the shareholders.
Yeah, they are, but you know how politics works?
I mean, we're often working with municipalities and inside government rules, so I do get pretty well acquainted with it.
Well, there's your public lobbying and so forth, which I understand Captain Momentum tolerated through his brother Michael. But then there's also the less formal kinds of lobbying.
Mr. McDonald, do you mean bribery? Because for our company, that'd be a death sentence if it ever got public.
No. Who needs to... What century do you live in, freeze frame? If you want to outright pay a politician, there's so many ways to do that which aren't illegal. I'm not talking about that. Not exactly. See, one of the problems that I've been having is that I propose a more privatized police, and I always get pushback. Why do you think that is?
Because the police have their own lobbies and unions.
They do. Let's not pretend the public industries aren't industries like the rest of us. They're just unfairly protected, is all. But not even that really matters. The problem is, I believe, too many politicians feel like they're too obviously selling out the public when they privatize services like the police or firefighting or what have you, dog catching. You know, even though we've had private ambulances and the like for years and that works fine, everyone is used to the police belonging to the city and then being beholden to the inefficiency of unions. You try to fix it and people feel like something's being taken away. So, what happens when a politician retires from office normally?
Well, they become consultants.
Correct. They become consultants or they go to work for a firm or a company that they helped out while they were in office. But no politician comes to work for you just for the money alone. They want respect, prestige. They want to feel like they're trading up. And if they come to you as a pariah with the tail between their legs and feeling like they got nowhere else to go, then they've been humiliated. Even if they got a pay raise, it feels like they're taking a cut. Now, politicians, they say to themselves, well, look, I got other powerful friends. I can go work for them. I don't need to do this. I don't need to make Kelvin McDonald my only option by fighting this difficult fight. So what we need to do, what needs to happen, is we need to make it feel like the politicians who come to our aid are heroes in this city. And like when they come to work for us, they're getting a promotion.
So that's the point of my broadcast, then.
That's the point of it. It's probably quite similar to what you were expecting. Tell the public what you do, what's great about your company. But more importantly than anything, convince the governor and the state congressman that Unstoppable Industries is on the rise and a great place to make their next career move.
All right, I follow your logic, but there is a bit of a problem. See, because as law enforcement, we wind up slaves to the states and the cities in a lot of ways. There's not really a way for politicians to move up by joining our company. They would just wind up slaves to whoever replaces them.
Well, see, there's the trick. That's how we convince them that helping us will help themselves. Get rid of the laws that are holding you back. Unhook this company from that slavery. And then, when the politicians join us, they'll be trading up to join the masters. Paul and Elvis, you are meanwhile still in a shipping crate with Terry and Lightshow. The plan, presently, is to poison Howard with poop water. How's that going?
All right, I can find the septic tank by just following the sounds of plumbing. But first I want to find a vending machine.
Why a vending machine? What possible way could a vending machine make your evil plan that much more cruel?
I just want a bottle of water. Plan to ration my own bottle, so I need a new one.
Well, I guess we can go ahead and add funding terrorism to our list of crimes today.
What are you talking about?
Where do you think the vending machine money will go? It's Captain Gway's ship.
All right, fine, Flux. Add it to my rap sheet.
The vending machines are in the cafeteria. When you arrive, Mercury and Howard have moved to somewhere else.
We need to figure out where in this place those two are spending the night. If they don't have any ship-related work, there's no chance they have a hard schedule.
Lightshow asks, what do you think Mercury is doing here? You think you ought to be too busy for small errands.
Well, having superpowers means that sometimes there's a kind of work only you can do. Smuggling, for example. Well, I'm not sure how much material he can liquefy. Certainly his clothes. Maybe a few important boxes. It could be he's just going to pick up a few important pieces and swim off with them.
Do we have any idea what might be important enough for that?
Not really. Could be firing mechanisms, critical components you can't risk losing. I don't know, assuming I'm even correct. Anyway, does anyone have a credit card for the vending machine?
You know, I packed a lot of stuff, but a credit card was not something I thought I'd need.
Well, I didn't bring my credit card. Flux, you're wearing utility armor. Is there space for a card and all that?
How about instead of funding terrorism, I could just teleport a bottle out of the machine by touching the machine? The bottles are close enough to the glass.
Wait, so can you do that? Just teleport something out of something else? Like, let's suppose that you got into a car. Could you teleport a piece of a car engine out of a car?
I guess, if the car part wasn't moving relative to me and it's located about a foot from where I can place my hand.
Or maybe you could teleport an object to the inside of an engine to cause damage and stop it from working.
Why would I want to damage somebody's car?
In case somebody ever stole a car! Look, forget it. Just get me a bottle of water.
Of course, taking a bottle of water would be stealing, which is also a crime.
Murder is a crime. But they'll never find your body, Elvis.
Threatening a law enforcement official is also a crime, Kimon, and a water bottle isn't much of a reason to kill someone.
Goodness, you're right. Oh, if only I had grander reasons to kill you and hide the body.
Okay, I get it. I will steal a water bottle for you. I place my hand on the vending machine and steal the water bottle. Here.
Thank you, Elvis, for making another calculated moral sacrifice. I pay a profound mental toll for each thing I ask you to do.
It's a shame that nobody can control your darker impulses.
I don't have dark impulses. I have dark vectors. Now shut up and let's get to the septic tank. Does anyone want to drink this water? I feel like it shouldn't go to waste.
Lightshow says, dude, it's stolen water.
Fresh water is a precious resource on board a ship, Lightshow. Think of all the, I don't know, all the suffering aquifers in Phoenix, Arizona. Whatever, I'll chug it.
One bottle of water and quite a bit of careful maneuvering later and you found your way to the septic tank.
So I was thinking that we'd have to find a way to carefully open this thing. But Elvis, can you just put your hand on the tank and teleport a bit of poop water directly into the bottle? That way we don't have to touch it and it won't leave behind any foul smells that imply it leaked or something. Fewer traces would be good.
You know, I hate this plan and now you're gonna make me teleport poop water?
Why are you not happy? This is the most useful you've ever been in your entire career.
I have done a lot of work in the office, thank you very much. Quite a lot of my expertise is valuable in written format.
Well, we didn't hire you for office work. You were supposed to be supporting us in the field. Originally, Rudy thought you might be able to help him slow down or avoid collateral damage anytime you misjudged a charge.
I'm not sure how practical that would have been, given how hard it is for me to teleport a moving object.
Well, it was one of his ideas, but otherwise we talked about infiltration, bugging, and other kinds of surveillance work. This here is exactly why he and I wanted to hire you.
Though I assume he had a slightly stronger adherence to international law.
The man felt an adherence to justice. Now get me some poop water!
Fine. I put my hand on the septic tank and teleport some of the water into the bottle.
Lightshow asks, can you pull other things out of a container? Like, could you pull air out of a tire? Or make a pressurized tank implode?
I guess I could.
You could, but you don't. Anyway, let's get back to the mess hall before it fills up with people.
You painstakingly return to the mess hall. Kimon, you can hear the chefs in the back finishing dinner. The hall itself is large enough to fit roughly 20, but if it gets crowded, someone is almost certain to bump into you.
Okay, Elvis, how far can you teleport something like a vending machine?
I guess to probably anywhere on the ship.
And in that case, let's scout around for the nearest maintenance closet.
You poke around until you find one nearby outside the mess hall. It's a fairly large space. It'd be a tight fit for the machine, but so long as nobody needed to get it out again, you could put it in here.
All right, I got it. Elvis, you teleport one of the mess hall vending machines into this closet. Lightshow, you make a replica of it, and then make it solid so that anybody who walks into it gets what they expect.
Lightshow says, you want to stick four of us into the space of one vending machine?
Well, vending machine's pretty big. Can you make two seats above and then give Flux and I two seats below? Give yourself some space to look out, maybe letting some of the glass be see-through above eye level. That way you can do some scouting of your own.
I'll get tired trying to set on my own illusions. I'll get tired if I have to prop up our bodies for too long, too.
Okay. I've got another idea. Let's suppose that me, Flux, and Terry all squeeze in together in the vending machine, and then Lightshow, you could find another place to hide. Where else is he gonna hide?
Lightshow says, I think maybe Kimana's right on this one. We can't fit all four of us together in a fake vending machine, but I could find a place to hide on my own.
All right, when I leave the vending machine, you'll have to cover my approach to Howard. I intend to be quick about it, but can move blind, so you can cover as much space as you have to for me to move in. But Lightshow, where are you gonna go?
It's easy, I'll just make myself look like a potted plant or something. You won't even notice I'm here.
All right, that's it, we need to move. Elvis, teleport this vending machine out. Okay, but this is really dangerous for Lightshow.
You teleport the vending machine away. Lightshow creates a fake copy of it, and the other three of you move inside. By the time you're situated, you've already lost sight of Lightshow.
Where is he? Gosh, his powers are really good. Kimon, can you tell where he is? I can indeed.
You got this taken care of without too much time to spare. In only another 5 minutes or so, the first set of sailors begin to shuffle in.
Hey, Flux, if we decide to leave and teleport the vending machine back in the middle of dinner, could you land it square enough that nobody would notice? It's way too heavy. Even if I had it just a centimeter off the ground, it'd drop and make a lot of noise. All right, we're here for a bit, then.
Apparently, this first dinner feeds Captain Gwei, Mercury, and Howard, along with maybe a little over half the remaining crew. So you're in a room with roughly 12 people or so. Everyone gets a plate of something to eat except for Captain Gwei, who seems to be waiting at his table. When the crew gets situated, however, he stands up and announces, "My loyal crew, please join me in welcoming our dear friends, Mercury and Howard, to the first dinner aboard this vessel. Now, don't be too starstruck. They are quite famous, and I'm sure that some of you will be quite eager to tell your friends when the voyage is over. One of you." Captain Gwei points to one of the crew members, who turns pale and his eyes go wide. Two other crew members lift him up under his arms. They bring him to Captain Gwei's table. Captain Gwei says, "You would tell your friends. No one should tell their friends." The crew member says, No, sir, I... And then Captain Gwei bites into his head with his massive hooked jaws. The man has virtually no time to scream. Terry stumbles back away from his peephole and tries to compose himself. Even without super hearing, however, you can hear that this grisly murder does not stop with only the first bite. The room is completely silent, except for the sounds coming from Captain Gwei's table. And then, one other sound. Bzz, 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 bzz.
I slowly turn to look at Flux. I get out my phone. Click, 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 click. Hey, Mom, very busy right now, working, love, Elvis.
Bzz. Your mom sends back a text. Be safe, love you too.
I put the phone away. Did anyone else notice?
You'd naturally expect this to be the worst time for Elvis's phone to buzz. But then this was maybe the best time. Everyone is sitting quietly at their tables, not really touching their food, except for a few tough guys who clearly want to demonstrate that they're not bothered by this. Nobody's really looking around to see who had their cell phone on. It's not really an appropriate time to do that.
Terry, everybody's glued to this, so I'm going to make my move. Do you think that Lightshow will be able to make an illusion to cover me up to Howard's table?
Terry nods.
I make my move, creeping silently from the vending machine.
As you make your way, you do your best to be as quiet as a mouse. But even if you had made a sound, it's unlikely that you would have pulled much attention away from the head table. Even blind by the illusions as you are, your super senses let you feel every terrible vibration. It's not far, and now you're leaning over Howard. Danger imminently in front of him in the form of Captain Gwei, and creeping behind him in the form of his father.
Pour a small amount of contaminated water into my hand, then flick the water droplets into his food. Keep doing this until I feel satisfied.
Even for you, this is a smidge tricky. You splatter a bit on the back of Howard's neck, but he just puts his hand up and wipes it away. He checks his hand to see what it was, frowning, but he doesn't quite register that this is anything worse than what his table mate is doing.
Okay, work done. Retreat back to the vending machine.
You head back. There's nothing to do now but wait. As Gwei's crime goes on, a few more of the crew eventually go to their meals. They'll miss dinner if they don't eat during their allotted time. Mercury begins to eat, but Howard doesn't. Eventually, Mercury nudges Howard, and Kimon, you can hear him mutter, "We must never display weakness. Eat. Act as though you have seen this 1,000 times. And Howard obediently eats the food on his plate. Kimon, you get the sense that you might have overdone it, because after Howard takes a bite, he hesitates, looking at Mercury, who motions that he keep going. And then Howard chokes the rest of it down. Perhaps this is a rather evil thing that you've done just now, but then perhaps you're also not the most evil man in the room by a long shot. If only perhaps.